On this episode of The Edge Podcast, ClearEdge CEO Leslie Vickery interviews Joan Davison, President and CEO at Higher Counsel and Mastelin Company, a leading services provider to law firms, corporations, and government agencies for today's new legal economy. As a leader in the recruitment industry, the theme of Joan's interview is leadership, and Joan begins the interview by sharing how she experienced adversity at a young age that led her on her successful career path from operations to the C-suite. She also explains why execution is key at all levels of an organization, how she remains constantly inspired as a leader, and what excites Joan most about being in the recruitment industry, and so much more. I hope you enjoy this interview.
Hi, everyone. This is Leslie Vickery, the CEO and founder of ClearEdge Marketing, and I am here today on the Edge podcast with Joan Davison. Joan is the president and CEO at Higher Counsel and Mastelin Company, and I originally met you, Joan, at staff management. And this was going back several years ago. So you spent nearly 16 years in various roles, most recently as president and COO. Then you went on to another role as CEO. So basically on the operations side, and you've really progressed nicely. Something that had stood out to me as we were planning this podcast was really your role as a leader and how you've moved up in companies from operations to, and in the C-suite in operations, but now into the CEO and president role. So first, again, welcome to our podcast. And second, tell us a little bit about you, your career progression, and how you went from operations and into the CEO role.
Yeah, well, good afternoon. Thanks for having me. What a fun conversation that you guys have kind of outlined here. So it's an interesting path I took, and it's not the normal path. So I'll give you a little bit of background and try not to bore you, but kind of share a little bit of the history. So a crazy thing happened during my sophomore year in college. I actually came home for Christmas break, and I became very ill. And I spent the next several weeks in the hospital in recovery and scared the heck out of my family, but found myself unable to return to school. So at that time, you know, you kind of go, what are you going to do? And really, out of disappointment came opportunity for me. So I had the great fortune before I went to school to work with some amazing people at Coldwell Banker Real Estate in their corporate relocation sector. And at a very young age, they welcomed me back, gave me a full-time job, thought I was going to go back to school at that time. But I started working. They had me go into some national events. It was really exciting and a fast-paced industry because it was in relocation. At a national event, I met up with a boutique company in New Jersey and made an impression, and they offered me a director of operations role at 21. And it was exciting and it was fun. And by 24, they appointed me a vice president of operations nationally. At the same time, I was going to night school, completing my degree, and it was just a crazy, crazy time, but really a true blessing. After that experience, I joined staff management SMX in Chicago and worked there for over 16 years, which is some really incredible, talented people, Michael Miles, Mitch Greenwald, the Leeds Equity Group, and so many others. It's just a lot of talent and too many to name. But when I joined Staff Management SMX, it was a $67 million company, and I helped create it to over $700 million brand. I was able to participate in two transactions with the organization, one from private ownership to private equity. That's when Leeds Equity came in. And then the second one was to the sale of True Blue. So I left True Blue about a year and a half after the transaction, took some time off from staffing, and moved into kind of the logistics world. But Leslie, as you know, this is a very compelling and fulfilling industry, and Higher Counsel and Mastelin Company provided just a great opportunity to bring me back to an industry that I really enjoy, and they have such a unique part of the industry that they they service. It was just kind of too enticing to pass up. You know, as it relates from operations to the C-suite, I guess in my world, that's the best path to go. I really don't believe that there is a fundamental difference in most companies between sales, operations, and finance. I really believe that too many people get caught up in the role definition and the title gets in the way of transformation. So from my perspective, whether it be the C-suite or any position, everybody should sell, everybody should operate, and everybody should understand the finances of a company. And that way, everybody services the client. And that's really what I've looked at kind of throughout my career. It's less about the title and more about the importance of execution. And in my opinion, execution is what drives the company, regardless of the role or kind of where you started with. It's kind of the approach I've taken to my career, both from the companies I work for and certainly the clients that I service. I think it's really about execution and having that hands-on information allows me to be a better, corporate person for my company and a better provider of whatever service I'm providing. So that's kind of how I've tended to look at it.
So I certainly learned something new about you today, that at a very young age, you went through some adversity with being ill during college and coming out, but my goodness, surviving through that time and then to be able to say at 24 or 25, being the head of operations for a company, you were probably several years younger than your peers, I'm guessing. And, you know, that just speaks volumes to what you bring to the table from an execution, but also strategy standpoint. And, you know, I would argue it's interesting you said that it's not always about the title itself or, you know, people have different definitions. You seem to be able to straddle well between the execution piece, but also being a big thinker and being strategic and knowing that you have that strong operation side. It was interesting for me to hear you say everyone has to sell, because oftentimes you'll see leaders who are either really operations focused or really sales focused and have a hard time being both, but that's something that you've been able to achieve. So congratulations with that.
Thanks. Yeah, it's really about the execution. And I think through the execution, you learn where your opportunities to improve are. And I think that's what gives you the strategy. That's what helps you be strategic or innovative, because it's through the actual hands-on execution that you see where process is broken and what you need to improve.
Right. Well, listen, this is not a sales pitch for HCMC. However, I know you are a leader in demand, clearly, based on your background and experiences. So tell us, I mean, aside from the fact, and you're right, we've both been in staffing for a very long time, for most of our careers, and in my case, certainly as well. It's something that once you're in it, you really do have a passion for it. And it's fast-paced, it's ever-changing, it's part of the workforce and talent, which is so critical to every business today. But we also have a passion for helping people and making sure that their careers are, you know, going in the right direction and taking care of them. So tell us a little bit then, getting back into the industry, what was it about the company? What was so special about HCMC that attracted you to the role?
Great question. For me, it really provides an exceptional service-focused client environment on mutuality. And mutuality is very big for me in my personal life and my professional life. And this is an organization that brings that to the forefront. So it has a unique spot in the marketplace, servicing the legal and the corporate legal community. It also has this just desire for exceptional quality and delivery of ROI and everything else to a company that's so important. It obviously services our contractors. But what's really unique is that, you know, a lot of companies can say that, but at HCMC, we do it every day because the company was converted to an ESOP. So we're 100% employee owned. And to my knowledge, and Leslie, you know this industry very well, maybe I'm wrong, but to my knowledge, it's the only staffing industry firm that's 100% employee owned and operated. I could be wrong, but that's what I certainly believe. So the ESOP has a very unique advantage to the company. And it's not just for our management team or our full-time staff, it's actually extended to the contractors. And I think that really displays mutuality in how we conduct ourselves, and to me, that's really compelling. Additionally, you know, great leadership. Our founder, Lynn Mustel, who's our chairman now, founded the company 30 years ago. When you think about the legal community 30 years ago and a woman entering it, you absolutely know that there were glass ceilings in place, and Lynn has certainly helped raise them for all of us in business, but certainly for our company and for the industry. We've got a great equity group, Long Point Capital. They're just a lot of fun to work with, very knowledgeable people who are supportive. And between that, a management team, a great product, it was too enticing to pass up. This is a really cool company. I know you said it's not a sales pitch, so I'm not going to go any further other than to tell you good things are really going to happen here, and I think you guys can continue to look to us. I mean, they do everything. We do it all, from e-discovery to partner placement to law firm merger and acquisition to project attorneys for companies. It just has a great service offering, and it's fun to be part of, and I like that energy that comes with it, and hire counsel Mustel have both.
Well, I love the fact that the ESOP, and you may be correct, I'm not 100% sure, but the fact that it extends out to everyone is certainly a differentiator and something that would stand out to me as unique for you. And I love the blend of professional services that you all offer. So it's a combination of, you know, working with the law firms based on what they need, and you obviously know what it is that they need, and offering them everything from consultative services to helping them find the right people. Seems like a nice suite of offerings. So I look forward to, I think you're dangling out some carrots on some interesting things to come. So I'll be keeping a close eye on that and look forward to seeing more. So Joan, in preparation for today, I decided, you know, just doing some background research, I was looking at your LinkedIn profile and wanted to read through a couple of the recommendations, again, just to see a little bit more about your leadership style. I haven't worked with you day to day, so it was nice to kind of read about what other people had to say. So I was especially impressed by this particular comment, so I'm going to go ahead and read this for everyone. This person said, "I have been very lucky to have Joan as an influence in my career since a very early age. When I reported to her, she quickly gained my respect because of her ability to assess the situation and drive through tough decisions with a smile. Then she gained my appreciation by seeing where I had potential and supporting me as I stretched far outside my defined role. She has been a mentor to me throughout my career and a model for leadership, business savvy, and character I have often found myself trying to emulate." So I'm guessing you know who wrote that.
Yes, I do. They're very kind and gracious.
Well, I would say it definitely makes me want to work with you, and is just fascinating to read, and then actually saying it out loud and hearing your story earlier about the opportunities you were given so early on in your career. It's not surprising to me that you would manage and lead someone in that way, that it makes a lot of sense. It's all coming together for me actually right now. So with that, what inspires you as a leader? Is it a person? It could be anything internal that kind of drives you as a leader. Maybe share a little bit of background on that for us.
Yeah. You know, there's certainly a lot of people you can look to that give you inspiration and give you role models. For me, though, I think it's a culmination of lots of different folks and lots of different internal drive. And it's kind of simple for me, and I don't want to make it too simple or underscore it. But for me, it really is just about doing the right thing that has an impact and has meaning. So if you find mutuality in the course of a day, it's just a great motivator. If you believe in what you're doing makes a difference and it has value, it's a motivator and it's an inspiration. It sounds really simple, and it probably is, but if you center yourself in that conviction and you stand up for what's right and you communicate the message, it comes more, it just kind of happens. It's my responsibility, I truly believe that, as a leader, to not just look at a bottom line, but to look at the lives that we impact and create a mutual win for all. I don't believe you have to have just a great bottom line to be successful. I think you have to really look at the people that you work with, the people that you work for, the stakeholders, the clients, and look at where there is mutuality and how you can create the win. And I think when you do that, I think you find inspiration in it. It's a very rewarding experience.
Fantastic. Want to shift gears for a minute here. So I recently read an article that said, to be successful, you really need to look in the mirror, not the next cubicle. Of course, there's also the famous Theodore Roosevelt quote, comparison is the thief of joy. So essentially, the point that we're making here is that there will always be someone ahead of you or who you think in your mind is, you know, gaining a promotion or a title change or something, and that the game of life, it's a marathon, not necessarily a sprint. So if you're constantly comparing yourselves to your peers, it can be extremely unproductive and, quite frankly, self-destructive. But it's something that I see happen all the time. Why did that person get a promotion? Why am I not getting promoted? I heard they got a raise. Why didn't I get an increase? Instead of looking in the mirror at themselves. So I guess what I would ask you is just the up-and-comers in our industry, as they look to grow into their roles and, you know, obviously learning from your own experiences that you've shared, but what advice do you typically give them in the industry as they look to grow and potentially have that kind of mentality?
Yeah. Do the job that needs to be done. You're quickly going to learn what's important. You know, when I walk into a field office, if the phone is ringing and someone's busy, answer the phone. It doesn't matter what my title is. Answer the phone. If a document needs to be crafted, get involved in crafting it. And then if someone needs to bind it and it's not your job, go figure out how to use the binding machine and do that. You have to worry less about titles, because titles can stand in the way of transformation and learning. You have to worry much more about overall service delivery and about execution. If you focus on that and you're coming up the ranks, it's going to get noticed. Not only is it going to get noticed, you're going to have a lot more knowledge to share with people, and that in itself will get you the promotions and will get you the attention you need. But you have to be willing to step outside of it's just about me and focus on what the end game is. And if that's a delivery to a client, engage in that delivery process. No matter how minuscule you think the task may be or not, if it needs to be done, that's what you do. And I think that many people forget that. And if you remember that, I think it'll be a great advantage to any career.
I think that's terrific advice. I think people get so stuck in, that's not my job, I'm not supposed to be doing that, and then say, why didn't they do that, or why isn't this person taking that on, and focusing less on that. I always say, you know, we all have the same goal here. We want the company to be successful. How that success happens, we have to roll up our sleeves and all do it together. Regardless of your role or your title, you should really bring that down. And clearly, for when you're looking to hire or when I'm looking to hire, the person I describe probably isn't the best culture fit for us. But I would say, hopefully, in working with leaders and mentors like you, they will, you know, learn and have advice to see how they can look past that, which I think is really critical, especially early on in their career.
Sure. Yeah, I agree, Leslie.
So how important, speaking of mentors, is being a mentor to you? Or another way to phrase it would be, so there's an opportunity to be a mentor, but then I always feel like there's always room to be mentored. How have both of those been important to you throughout your career and life in general?
Yeah, so I don't, you know, on the first one, two-part question I think you gave me. So, and the first one is being a mentor. I really don't look at myself as a personal mentor. In fact, it probably scares me a little bit to be described as that or called that. I'm just an individual who's really happy to share my experiences, my network, my passion for the industry, or my passion for whatever it is in my personal life. If someone can learn something along the way, I think that's great, and I'm happy to help them and share. And that's what really was done for me. So there's a lot of great people that I've had just the great fortune of people spending time with me and graciously sharing their experiences. And the list is just way too long to make note of everybody. But I really look at this from a standpoint, if you believe that you can find a learning in someone, regardless of title, regardless of position, then they are a mentor. And my life is filled with lots of mentors because I look at myself as a constant learner, and whether it's a C-suite person or someone answering the phone, I think if you can find the value and find what their life experience is and learn from it, that's a mentor. I mentioned early on that great group of people I worked with at Coldwell Banker. The funny thing is I still keep in touch with them 25 plus years later, and some of them have started their own companies. Many of them have gone on to just terrific careers and in really influential positions in corporate America. But when we all started, and we laugh about it today, we didn't have a title. We didn't know anything, right? We just wanted to do the right thing. And today, some of those folks I would consider, if you had to put a label on it, they're some great mentors for me. But we all started out in the same spot, just wanting to do a good job and be part of something that you were building. And that's what I look for today in how I look at how I define a mentor.
Yeah, Emily, who's sitting here, who's producing the podcast, I know she and I, over the years of knowing each other, have talked a lot about something that you mentioned, which is really near and dear to me, which is the learning mentor, the person you're learning from. And if you are taking a new job or looking at an opportunity within a company for advancement, to always make sure, one of the key criteria I always looked for was, can I learn from someone I'm going to be working with? Will they be open to sharing and teaching and, you know, making sure that I'm growing and that I can ask the questions and really put myself out there? Are there people there who I can learn from? It's so critical. And if the answer is no, if you're not learning, you're not growing. So you kind of answer your question for yourself when looking at opportunities. So I definitely agree with you on that one.
Yeah, and what you said is so interesting, because a tactic I learned really early on in my career was go into every meeting with an expectation and a target of learning something from someone. And that sounds kind of cold sometimes. People go, well, you're not going to learn from the whole group. And that's not really the case. The case is to define, gosh, I'm going to be meeting with, you know, whomever, they have knowledge or they have had an experience that I know I don't have. How do I align with that? And the fun thing is, the more often you meet with the same people, the expectation of what you're going to learn changes. So it's a great tactic I learned early on, and I echo what you and Emily are experiencing. It's kind of a fun way to do it.
Perfect. All right, so let's circle back to the recruitment industry at large. So as we mentioned earlier, we both have spent a lot of time in staffing. What excites you most about being in our space?
So I consider this a really fast-paced industry. I think it is highly, highly competitive. I think execution matters, and I think innovation matters. So those are components that I get very excited about. The faster you can run, you know, how you're going to how a competitive environment really spurs innovation. I think those are really really exciting aspects. And I also think, you know, when a company comes to you or a firm comes to you, they're giving you the opportunity to impact their highest valuable assets, right? You're providing them with people who are going to do something on behalf of that company. And I think that is a really cool aspect of this industry. I also think, you know, companies like HCMC and so many others out there, we get the great benefit of walking into many different environments, many different company cultures, many different opportunities. And you know, as I know, doing that, you see really the best and sometimes, unfortunately, the worst of what's out there. You get to craft from that and bring those experiences back to your company and then grow your organization even from a deeper standpoint. So I think the staffing industry is really in a unique position to take advantage of that and really build organizations that are meaningful in today's economy to impact change. And I think that's exciting. I mean, I think this is a really fast-paced industry, and I think innovation is happens every day in our business. Just look at the gig economy, all that's going on, or artificial intelligence and in the legal community that we're in. You know, people think, you know, oh my gosh, that's going to be, you know, it could be a downer. Some staffing agencies are going, oh, gig economy, not good for us, right? And that's just not the case. It's kind of like, think of it as the ATMs, right? Back in the late 70s and 80s, everybody thought it was going to put banking out of, you know, banking, the traditional banking model out of business. And it really hasn't, right? You see banks everywhere and more tellers. And I think that type of innovation is what the staffing industry is all about. And I think it's really an exciting industry.
I agree. I truly feel like in the last 12 to 18 months, we've seen so much change with the technologies and the companies focused on servicing our industry, whether the people came from the recruitment space and have been developing these technologies, or they somehow were engaged in talent acquisition in their company or just saw it as an opportunity in the space. I think there's so many changes happening. It's hard to keep up with in a really exciting way. So I couldn't agree with you more. And listen, I think if anyone from SIA is listening, or ASA or another association servicing your space, having you on a panel or a talk to cover that balance between innovation and execution is something that I think a lot of the up-and-coming firms struggle with, because they're so metrics-focused and so metrics-driven on the number side, it's often hard to then balance between innovation. Now, the larger recruitment firms certainly have found that balance, and certainly some of the small to medium-sized firms, but I think there's an art and science to finding that, and I couldn't agree with you more. You're either going to innovate, or companies are going to innovate around you and be more successful, so you kind of have to jump on board to be successful and be open-minded with that. So I like your thinking. So now I'm going to put you on the spot. We're going to close out the podcast with a little fun. I happened to learn something about you today that I did not know. However, we want to have a little fun with this one. So, and hopefully I'm not putting you too much on the spot, but tell us one thing we didn't already know about you that others may find surprising.
Surprising. Okay. Okay, so I have one for you. So first, blessed to have an amazing husband, Carl, two awesome sons, Tyler and Matt. Fortunate just that they're great folks, not just my kids. But my parents are in their 80s. My dad is actually 89 years old. So during the week, I get to engage in C-suite stuff in boardrooms and traveling around the country, meeting clients. And I spend a lot of time on the airplane. But on Saturday mornings, I get in my car very early in the morning, and by 5:30, I find my dad on a pontoon boat in Indiana on a fishing lake that is supposed to have fish, although it's hard to find them sometimes. And I bring the coffee, and usually every Saturday morning, myself and sometimes my mom will venture out at 5:30, meet him on the boat, coffee in hand. I bait my own hook.
Wow.
I know. How about that? Trust me, it's even surprising for me. And sometimes we actually catch a fish or two, and I truly consider it one of the greatest blessings of my life, and just so appreciative of one, my parents, and two, that they're still with me. But three, the fact that I get up, I don't get up for too much at 5 o'clock in the morning to get someplace by 5:30, but I do for baiting a hook. So how about that?
Aw, I love that story. It's, you know, it's such a nice tradition to share and to have your sons see you do that and to kind of pass that family tradition on to them. I was blessed to just have my dad in town for 5 days, and my mom is arriving tomorrow. And, you know, you forget just how special and precious that time is. You're very fortunate to be able to do that every Saturday with your dad and spend that special time with him. So thank you for sharing that story.
Sure, thank you.
So with that, how can people get in touch with you, Joan?
They can certainly link into me. They can go to our company website, hirecouncil.com or mistel.com, or if they'd like to email me, it's jdavison, D-A-V-I-S-O-N, at mistel, M-E-S-T-E-L.com.
Fantastic. Joan, thank you so much for joining us today on the Edge podcast. We really, truly appreciate you opening up and being so candid with us and enjoyed the conversation. Thank you.
Great. Thank you as well.
Thanks for listening to this week's The Edge episode. If you enjoy this podcast, please rate and subscribe to the podcast in iTunes. And you can also email me at etatum, T-A-T-U-M, at clearedgemarketing.com. And let me know if you have any questions or if you want to hear about anything in particular as it relates to our Women in Staffing series or our marketing episodes. So just shoot me an email and I look forward to connecting with you. Thank you.